Hi guys, it's Graham here from the podcast. Just before the podcast starts, I just want to let you know a wee thing. So we really appreciate every single listen that we get, and we're doing our best to never ever charge for anything. But we have signed up over at buymeacoffee.com/EAW podcast. So there's no subscription. It's a one-time thing. You can do it at your leisure. But basically, if you want, you can gift us the price of a cup of coffee. So if you would buy us a cup of coffee for listening to the podcast, it's a way to do it. Now, we would never, no, not a case we would never, but we're trying our best never not to monetize. But there is running costs, obviously. There's time. There's want to help guys to give up a lot of their free time and stuff to get better mics and better quality stuff and have more time to put out better quality content. Now, listen, if you don't want to do that, that is more than okay. Honestly, we hope that you just keep enjoying the free content and just supporting the podcast with your listens, because it really does help. We absolutely love doing it, and we appreciate every listen, every bit of feedback and everything going. So if you want, you'll find the link on our Twitter. It's pinned, or on our link tree. It should be in there too. So it's www.buymeacoffee.com/EAW podcast. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Everton Aren't We podcast. I'm Shane and I'm joined by Lee and Paul. Today we're going to cover the Everton and the Forest result. 2-0 yesterday. We're reacting the day after. Bit of controversy through the game. Just a few quick stats just to cover before we go on to the lads about what they thought overall, before we cover like the goals and stuff. Possession wise, we were outdone by 60-40%, both even on shots, almost, with Everton having 7, Forest having 8. And then if you're bothered about XG like Lee is, Everton's was 0.34 and Forest having 0.95. So I'll start with you, Lee. What's your overall thoughts on the game? Because I thought across social media and probably in our group chat, it was quite contrasting on what people took away from the game.
I thought it was as good a performance as you're going to get from us, really. I mean, we're not great to watch. They passed the ball better than us. That was evident within the first 10 or 15 minutes, I think. But, mate, it's not a bar how we play. When you're stuck in these relegation scraps like we have been the last now 3 seasons, mate, it's not about style or substance. It's about points.
And yeah.
An interesting thing I've seen, well, that I looked at, without the 8-point deduction, we'd officially be safe. Mm. So, you know, and you can't blame Dyche for that deduction, because really it all happened before he came to the club. We're just suffering the repercussions of it now, in this season. So, but going back to the match, I thought, yeah, it wasn't a great game, but as much as they played better football than us, Pickford made one good save, one really good save. Mm. And I know they had a few shots for the penalty, but they were nothing special, mate. And there's a reason why they're still behind us in the league, even though we've been deducted 8 points. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that showed. We had that little bit more of a cutting edge up front, which is unusual. But I'm not surprised. They haven't, Chris Wood's not, I don't think he's a Premier League striker, to be honest.
Yeah, they spelled him there a couple of weeks ago where he couldn't stop scoring.
But he scored a hat-trick on Boxing Day or something against Newcastle, up at Newcastle. But, yeah. I mean, you know, they were trying to play through him, and then they were trying to play through the wingers. And I just don't think anything they tried worked. I think most of our defenders were solid. So, for me, I wasn't expecting us to be playing, you know, tippy-tappy football, but I expected us to win. And to get that second goal in the second half, I think that relaxed everyone, the players, the crowd. And it was nice because we haven't been scoring too many goals lately. So to get that second goal, like halfway through the second half, I think give the players a bit of confidence. So it was nice to see them playing a bit more freely in the last 15, 20 minutes than what they normally do. So, yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Overall, I'm pleased with it because it gives us 3 more points closer to safety. So,
yeah. I think I've seen it was the first time he scored more than one goal in the past 16 games, I think it is. So I think that second does give you that bit of a, I mean, it's Everton, so it never really does, but it's a bit of a cushion to feeling a bit more comfortable. But I said that after watching it, it was painful to watch the match itself. And but then when I went on to, you know, X and stuff, obviously it's always contrasting, but that a lot of people thought that it was a great performance. And then I seen shouts about like Ashley Young being outstanding, which I think we always call for him not to start. I think it used to be Mikhailenko, and now it's sort of like I feel comfortable Mikhailenko being at left back, and now the problem's always being with the right back, whether it's Patterson or, you know, I always feel better having Coleman there. But again, what was your thoughts on the game yesterday?
Yeah, I think expectations are low. Do you know what I mean, Shane? So I don't really expect much. So anything above that is a bonus. But no, I mean, one thing you'll get from Dice is consistency in terms of who he picks. There's never really any surprises. And I don't think the squad would really allow for many surprises, but certainly, you know, ball attention. And I think probably in that first half, probably before we scored, and then after we scored, really, we had a decent little spell of keeping the ball. And to be fair, thought actually look comfortable here, and if we can nick a goal, we'll be all right. And we did nick that goal, and then we kind of just let them back into it towards the back end of the half. And I think that's the frustration in terms of probably the game management, but that's on the players. That, but that's, you know, I can't lay that at Dyche's door, you know. He doesn't cross the white line as much as I think. What are they doing in training all week? And why can't we seem to keep hold of the ball? Why can't we pass the ball better? Why don't our players make a lot of movement, penetrating runs and things like that? Well, the personnel's probably not really there. I was happy to see Jack Harrison back in the team. And then obviously you look towards Ashley Young, and I don't want to single him out too much. You know, there's quite a lot of players in there who I would gladly see go back out the door in the summer. Probably 99% of the squad, if I'm honest. You know, and Ashley Young's kind of doing a job. He's a Dyche type of player, isn't he, mate? I think he'll come in, do bits, nearly give away several penalties, and then do a few more safety bits. He's not going to run up the line. He's not going to get beyond the full backs. He's certainly haven't seen many balls whipped into the box by him, which I think he was quite renowned for. And I think Dyche has played him on the wing a lot. And I think that towards the end of his United career and his Villa careers, he was moved to right back. So I don't know. I just think the personnel there, it's a bit of a mishmash of players that, you know, there's nothing that really excites us as Evertonians. But the one thing I will say is it's pure relief to get that result. And all that matters now, mate, at this time, after the 6-0 smashing, is getting points on that board. So it's a complete relief, mate, and just hope we can squeeze a few more results out like that in the next couple of games, and hopefully get us over the line.
Yeah, because it is easy, isn't it, for teams like that, especially like you say, after the 6-0 beating against the probably what you'd say is probably the worst Chelsea sides in a while. To just show, especially after the run that we've had for 15, 16 games, to just for it to carry on. I think the importance as well before going into the game, knowing that we're going to find out sooner rather than later over what points deduction Forest get as well. So I think it was sort of a double header for us to get the win over them.
Yeah,
Moving on to
absolutely.
the goals, Gay got the first one. Seeing a load of stuff saying that how many of yous were screaming when he pulled his leg back to not shoot, because the stat that I pulled up over it as well was that it's this guy who scored two goals from 100 shots outside the 18-yard box, but it, I mean there was wasn't much power out of it. It seems to just get so far across cells, but it was a good goal, wasn't it, Lee?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was watching it myself, and I was just like, just pass it, just pass it. And then when I seen it go along the floor, I was like, Fucking hell, he might actually get this on target because they normally end up in Rose Head.
Yeah.
And only in Rose Head before it goes over the crossbar. Do you know what I mean? I didn't expect it to go in. I thought the keeper could have done better really, but I'm not going to fucking complain because, say, you know, he doesn't pop up with a lot of goals, but it was, as Paul said, it was in a spell where we were having good, we were exchanging passes in the edge of the box and stuff, getting in behind them sometimes, and they were just catching like a deflection. There's a few occasions where that happens. So to get the goal when you're on top of the game, everyone says it, all the pundits, players, managers all say it. It's important to score when you're on top. So it sets us in the right direction for the rest of the game then. But yeah, I mean, well, we've got 5 games left. Do you reckon he can average another 100 shots and maybe get another 2 goals before the end of the season?
Probably the 100 shot. I don't know about the goals. But the goal come from Mikhailenko getting forward and crossing the ball in as well. I think it was Aina, is how you pronounce it. It cleared the ball and then obviously Gaze took the touch and then knocked it forward a bit and then he's got the finish. He got from me double checking, he got man of the match yesterday. He was the highest rated player on the pitch as well. So it's always nice to see him. You know, he seems, you know, since he's come back, he's been quite hot and cold in some fixtures. But with the second one, Paul, it was McNeil, popped up through the centre, where a lot of people, myself included, probably after seeing him there a few times, think he might suit playing centrally, maybe into Corey's role, or if the, you know, stuff switched around, but it come as well from off the back of some quite good team play from down the left, starting round by the left back position, I think it was. And then obviously, as he's done a few times, he just comes up with a big screamer, gets the ball, and there's so much space in the middle, knocks it forward, and then he just lets loose on it.
Yeah, it was great, mate. And do you know what? Brandt waited about 3 or 4 times, brought the ball out of defence, and he drove through the midfield a few times, and literally it came from that. So sort of Branthwaite brought it out, and then he passed it forward. Before we knew it, obviously Decore had had a little pocket of space there just outside the area, and McNeil took it. And again, you know, if you want to be high, I'm believe me, 2-0 fantastic. But if you want to look at both goals, as Lee said there, if that was my goalie, be expecting a bit more there.
Yeah,
had a long time to look at it, but I'm not complaining. I mean, listen, it's that old in, took a few bounces and it's gone in off the post, and it's pure relief for 2-0, mate. It's literally, you know, it's knife edge stuff at 1-0. Forrest were huffing and puffing without creating anything. To me, I agree with Garner, man of the match, but I think if you were forcing me into one, I would have given it to Branthwaite or Tarkowski. I thought they were both solid at the back. A lot of intercepting. I think Tarkowski in particular, probably because, as you say, Woods, he's not very pacey, but he's a big, strong lad. He's been around the Premier League a long time, and you know what you get from him. And I thought Tarkowski and Branthwaite handled him brilliantly. And I think that's what forced Gibbs White a lot deeper. You'd seen him coming deeper to get the ball, and it was just long balls into the box then, mate. So, no, that second goal definitely, you know, for me, not killed the game off, but it certainly made me feel a little bit more at ease when I was watching it then. So, listen, mate, I'll take them as they come. As they say, I take it off someone's ass, off the thigh, 1 yard, or whatever. Not bothered. As long as we score, mate, and we get over the finish line. You know, I was hypercritical in terms of Dyche, and I still am to a certain extent. And, you know, if we do stay up, you know, we'll see what happens there. But no, I think at this point, mate, I'll just take the results as they come. If we keep getting 1 or 3 points, mate, I'm more than happy, and I'm not bothered how they go in. I really don't care at this stage.
Yeah. I think, what you saying about Tarkowski there, I think it was don't know whether it was missed or underrated, but after the massive Pickford save, he kept it contained, and then he made like a sort of last ditch slide, and got rid of the ball. So I think, like you say, I think sometimes without good Branthwaite's been, and how good he looks and stuff, and all the, you know, the stories and stuff around him in terms of what might happen in the summer. I think Tarkowski sort of goes under the radar. I think he's that solid. You're going to get a decent performance, yeah.
Yeah, he's played every minute, I believe, Shane. I might stand corrected there, but I think off the top of my head, mate, he's played every minute.
It's got to be one of the best bits of business that we've done in a very long time. A free agent, probably not on the most wages at the club. He's probably up there somewhere around, but I mean, for free, and then, like you say, he's playing it. I think last season either, but, and then this season, if that's right, playing every single minute, it's unbelievable.
He's missed. He got taken off, didn't he, when he got that head injury? I can't. Before Christmas, he's basically missed 2 minutes of Premier League football since he signed for us.
That's crazy.
Insane. That means insane. Yeah.
That's the one, though, aren't they? We all know. I was actually at the Everton Burnley game when Benitez was in charge of Everton, and he went through Richarlison, and we were all fuming. But that's the type of player he is. When he stays down, you're worried because he's someone who just jumps back up normally. Yeah. He's an old school centre half for me. But if you look at him when he was at Brentford when he was younger, he can actually play football. Like the positive way.
I think he said Dice sort of pushed it out. When he went to Burnley. But I think, like you say, like an old fashioned centre half in terms of like he's sort of that ilk of like, not centre half, but the same ilk as like Gareth Barry, sort of what we got out of him. That type of player. One of the other things as well, though, I wanted to sort of mentioned there quick after when McNeil scored was that I don't know if you've seen when you have watched it back when the ball goes in and the lads go off celebrating, Beto stood right in front of the goal just screaming towards the stand like he just loves the club. He just loves it. Bless him, he hasn't been the best this season, but I mean he's there for it and he wants it.
No, you can't fault that, Shane, I don't think, mate. I mean, give the lad that, you know, he's definitely made up. I mean, he still looks like he's won a raffle, like, but he's made up to be there, isn't he? I think I would be, mate, if I'd literally been working in the KFC and then ended up in the Premier League. But, you can't listen. I want to see players doing that, mate. You know, I don't want to see too much over the top, but I think he genuinely cares, mate. He has a go. And, you know, yeah, he's... Maybe that'll come in time. I don't know. I've tried to watch as much as I can of him on clips, and that's all I've got really. But in the flesh, he does miss a lot. He's missed quite a lot of chances that are about 2 yards out, which I think is more worrying.
I think the Chelsea game he did, didn't he?
Definitely, mate. You know, he's done that. I think Fulham was the other one that stood out. I think he missed a real sitter at Fulham about 2 yards out with his header, I think. But I'm not going to knock the lad. You know, he's new in. He looks genuinely made up to be there. And, he's getting that thing, mate. I had when we had Dennis Trafalese years ago, where, you know, I used to sit in the Gladi and just think, oh, come on, lad, score, please. You know what I mean? I'd be made up if you scored. And then he scored against Chelsea. And one of the rare times I've celebrated crazy because I was just made up for him. He's better than him. He is better than Strafalese. I do will him. I want him to do well, mate, and I'd love him to come. Gordon, we'd all idolise him, and that'd be cracker. But yeah, the jury's out, I think, Shane.
Yeah, I mean, just touching on him as well, I think he had quite a nasty head injury with it goes up for the header with Gibbs right near the end of the game. Didn't move for quite a while there, but when he got stretched off, he threw his thumbs up sort of thing, got clapped off, and then after the game he said he got took to hospital for precautions, and then a bit later on he said that he was fine. So probably, I mean, he's probably gonna miss the derby and then the game after. I think is it 10 days that they made if it's concussion, they can't play for, is it?
Yeah, it's something like that. I'm not sure on the exact days, but. He's definitely not going to play against Liverpool.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll probably see Shamithy on the bench or getting a few more minutes, but hopefully he's back and he's fit.
Did you see his Instagram post? Go to sleep.
No.
He put a picture of him lying on the floor, out cold. Go to sleep.
Well, what's the script with Calvert-Lewin then? Is that just a precaution, his hamstring, or is that possibly...
Well, he went down, didn't he? Got treatment, and then came back on for about 5 minutes. And as Dice normally does when Calvert-Lewin, like, gets a knock or something, he just takes him off. So, I think that could have been the best thing he'd done at the weekend, because obviously when he took him off, he never knew what was going to happen to Beto in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
So that could be a blessing in disguise that he took him off. Hopefully it is only a precaution, because he did carry on playing. He made a few runs. So I don't think he's injured. I think, obviously, with his injury record over the last couple of years, and Dice doesn't seem to take any chances with him these days once he does go down. He probably knows himself, doesn't he?
The amount of times he's been injured and it's the same stuff. He probably knows himself when it's starting to sort of itch at him, sort of thing. But one of the main things or talking points in the game was the three penalty shouts. Go on to them is obviously it was addressed after the game, was that Forrest Twitter account or X account coming out and basically, as Gary Neville put it, mafia threatening, it sounded like the Premier League or the PGMOL, basically saying that they warned the referees before the game that the fella in the VAR was a Luton fan, and that they weren't happy with it, and that they were not given three blatant penalties. Obviously, after the fact, I think it's been spoken about by pundits, and then I've got it noted there that I can't remember his second name, but they have the ex-referee Dermot on Sky, and he said that it was only the third instance that we'll speak about that was a penalty, the other two weren't. So, I mean, the Premier League say that we feel are done by with a lot of things, especially with the protests and stuff like that. But if the club's coming out with it, that's got to have been cleared from the very top. And I think it's just embarrassing more so as well for like the Forest fans, that, you know, that's getting put out there, because they're only going to get into trouble for it. And then it doesn't help that as well that Mark Clattenburg, that's his defo's name, isn't it? Mark. Yeah. I had Mark or Martin in me at that.
But he's
part of like Forrest as like an advisor or something like that. And then Gary Neville was also saying that he needed to step down and resign from his job and stuff like that because it looked bad on him and like the integrity of referees. But what I'll let Paul, what did you think of the tweet when you seen it?
I thought it was brilliant, mate. Their chairman, remember the Liverpool game, was it at home and he went back flying on the pitch?
Yeah.
I've just had a little look at his name. Maranakis, I think it says. He's one of them characters, mate. He's literally, I don't know, a bit bonkers or whatever. But so, that tweet does smell like something he'd probably did, given, you know, it's quite outspoken, said a lot of things. But you know what? The amount of times I thought in my own head, with Everton, come out and give us a statement and let's do something against the Premier League. So I can't sit here and slate Forrest too much. Yeah, it was against Everton and all that. And listen, I'm buzzing, we won, and you know, made up. And I'm sure if it was on the shoes on the other foot, lads, I'll just speak for me, I'd have been blazing. So if Everton had come out after them and done that, I'd have been going, go ahead, let's have it. Do you know what I mean? So I can't sit here and say it's completely out of order. I think the Premier League is corrupt as shite.
Yeah.
I'm not putting any slight on them refs, but we've seen a lot of referees, and I think there's been quite a few compilations on X going round about the penalties we should have had, and literally where players have had the shirt ripped up round their head, and it hasn't even been reviewed by VAR. So,
yeah,
it's against us. So it's different. So, you know, my instant reaction is, get up. But I can't blame them. If it was the shoe was on the other foot, I would be fuming, and I'd be looking for it myself. I don't think our club would do that. And personally, I'd be loving that if the club done that. That's just me. A lot of fans are going, nah, it's unprofessional, it's this, that, and the other. I think it's rich with Gary Neville. Do you know what I mean? You know, that their clubs were looking to, you know, move on and do other things and, you know, in the Super League and whatever. So they can't
talk. Well, Carragher wanted the Spurs game replaying, didn't he? That's just been getting fired back
mate,
at him.
You know what I mean? Come on, short memories in it. And, you know, all I'll say is if it was Everton, I'd have been buzzing if Everton had done something like that. And so professional or not, that's up for others to debate. But yeah, I can see why they've done it, and I can see why people think it's the wrong thing.
Lee, after the game, Nico Williams got interviewed, and I watched that last night. He sort of went, you know, as far as the players can go, when all guns blazing, sort of thing. Said if it was a big six side, that they'd got all three of the penalties, and they've had one penalty all season, and basically just called them out and but called them corrupt, but without saying the words. A lot of people said it was refreshing, but what did you think about the tweet?
I can't really blame Nico Williams because he just played 90 minutes and obviously the emotions and the adrenaline. But I agree with Paul on the tweet that he sent, but also you can't be doing that in public. As much as we would love Everton to do that, and I agree with Paul again, I'd love Everton to do that with some of the fucking decisions we've had go against us. And never mind the two fucking point deductions we've had. But they're the type of things that you say behind closed doors to the Premier League and to the PGO, MLO and all that. For them to do that, mate, that you're calling them corrupt in broad daylight. Mm. And I mean, as much as we all think they are,
you still can't say it.
No, it's for me, mate, it is... I mean, I'm not on the side of Jamie Carragher where it's like they should be harshly punished. I just think they should be told, listen, you can't be doing shit like that because it is unprofessional for a football club. As I say, for a player to do that in an interview where a club spokesperson's picked in to go and do the interview after the game and there's adrenaline through the roof, he's obviously emotional. I get why Nico Williams was basically saying the same thing without actually saying it. But for the club, mate, no. And touching on Clattenburg, that he does, I agree with Gary Neville. How a Premier League club can appoint an extra referee just because, like, I'd say every one of them, well, out of the three penalties, two of them are subjective. So he's not. It's not like it's a matter of fact that it should have been a pen. So he's going to give his opinion. But he's going to give his opinion based on keeping his employers happy. So he's going to tell them what they want to hear. And that, for me, he's basically robbing a wage. Yeah. Whatever he's getting paid, I'm guessing he is getting paid, he's robbing a wage. The man was an ex-Premier League referee. You know, footballers at the minute aren't allowed in the VAR room because FIFA won't allow it. And Howard Webb's actually went on record saying he wouldn't mind having ex-players in there, or FIFA rules don't allow it. So I don't think referees, whether they're retired or not, shouldn't be allowed to be employed by football clubs because they're obviously going to say things to keep their employers happy, as a lot of us do at times, even though we might hate our employers. We want to keep them happy and keep them on side. So, you know, you get more hours or you get the cushy jobs in work and stuff. That's the way the world works. So, yeah, I don't blame Nico Williams. I think it was a bit of bad taste from Nottingham Forest. And I understand the frustration because they've had some howlers like we have, like Wolves have. Wolves have had, mate, I think Wolves have probably had the worst decisions all season. But they're the things you say in their meetings when the chairman and all the execs meet up every month when they have the monthly meetings at the Premier League. They're the type of things you say then. For me, you don't air out that type of grievance in public, especially when you're basically calling. Let's face it, they didn't say corruption, but they said, you know, we knew the VAR official, Stuart Atwell, is a Luton fan. you know, and they didn't name him, but everyone knows who it was.
That's the way Sky put it across. Was the well, Carragher was like, you've said he's a Luton fan, so you're saying that he's cheating by being like on the match. But in saying that, Nico Williams, I commend it. I think if any player comes out like that and he can articulate it in a way where he's not going to get fined or anything, because a lot of the times these days they come out in the interviews and they go, can't say nothing because I'll get fined, and they're sort of brushed away. I think it's off like bittersweet for us because we're sort of like, yeah, it would be big six clubs that would get it, but then on the other hand, we've been burnt by it, like Paul said, so many times. I think there was a point where we'd been over a year or longer without a penalty and stuff like that. So this is why it's sort of bittersweet. And then obviously, I think in terms of the tweet, I think it's probably harsh. Well, it's probably enough, the sort of backlash and embarrassment of putting the tweet out. I don't think they need to be like reprimanded for it. But as well, after that, Ashley Young put I think it was on his Instagram, it might have been a tweet. He put up a picture of Crimea River, screenshotted on a Spotify, and that was it. So everybody was buzzing with Young for that, like, bit of shit.
Put him in the fucking Everton Hall of Fame just for that fucking screen. Tell him, yeah. Fucking love it. I love that type of shit.
Sorry.
But the cases that we're talking about, anyway, the penalties. So the first one was Young. All three of them were actually Young, which is why I mentioned earlier on that it's, you know, he's a liability. But the first one was he'd stretched out for the ball against Reina. But from the looks of it, he's sort of looking for it, and from what they said afterwards with the VAR and stuff like that, they said it was minimal contact. So he sort of looked for it. Lee, did you think we got away with it, or do you think it wasn't a pen?
No, I don't think it was a pen.
No.
I think he sort of stretches his foot out, hoping for the contact. I know why he went down, because obviously he was unbalanced, so I don't think he like over-exaggerated the fall or anything, but I do think he was looking for it. And it was the barest of contacts. It's not like I've seen Ashley Young's wipe out players before. He fucking went to Diaz at Anfield, didn't he, for the first yellow card that he got. That was a proper fucking tackle. Do you know what I mean? Now, for me, I did think that was the one that, but when you look at it, from different angles, I think he's looking for it too much.
Yeah.
When the easier option is to play it out wide or to bend a shot, because he could have got a shot away.
Mm.
A bit like Saka in the Champions League against Bayern Munich.
Yeah. He
probably gets a shot on goal, or he can play it out wide and then he can whip a ball in the box, and they've got a fucking 6'6" giant in the box, haven't they? Do you know what I mean? But
yeah.
No, for me, the first one, the more I've looked at it, the more I'm convinced it wasn't a pen.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more subtle than, like you say, the Saka one. And then I think the other example I said off pod was the Harvey Elliott one against United. In real time and stuff, it like, wow, he snapped them there. But then when you actually look at it back, it's like, you know, they've started doing it now, where it's sort of they're stretching the leg out towards the player just to get that contact. But Paul, the second one was the handball. Against the pundits and VAR as well, Dermot said, reiterated it. He said that with the momentum that he's running at towards the ball, it's a natural body position for his arm to be in, because his arms aren't flailing like sort of above shoulder height. And then, you know, Lee said before as well about like the distance. I think Lee described it as 8 inches away, he said. But yeah. did you think that one? I didn't think it was, but it's one of them. It's sort of, you know, if it does against another team, you're screaming for it. But I do think with the way that it's handball sort of been this season, and probably for the last season or two, that one shouldn't be given, but obviously we've seen them given before.
Yeah, You're right, mate. And you've seen them given, and I think that's the frustration and probably what's boiled over with Forrest in terms of, you know, you have seen these type of penalties given, then you've seen some not given, and then there's this unnatural body position, and, you know, Ashley Young only being 8 inches away and stuff like that. So, you know, this is where the PGMOL and the VAR and everything else is kind of frustrating, because you do see them given. So if that was Everton, I would feel absolutely robbed. I would, because you see them given. You'll watch a match next weekend and there'll be one similar to that probably given. So,
yeah,
and then you'll go look at Everton again, and it's another one that we'd put in to the montage of penalties we should have had. But when you look at it again, like Lee said there, it's natural body position. You said it yourself there, Shane. Yeah, even more so, it's Everton. It's definitely not a penalty. But you see them given, mate. And I think that's the frustration for every single fan of a Premier League club around the grounds now, is for everyone that's not given, you'll see 10 given. So you're going, hang on a minute, that's because it's us, it's Forest, it's Everton. They hate us, they want to see us relegated, blah, blah, blah. And that's the problem for me, mate. It's the consistency bit. You know, no, I don't think it's a penalty. But, you know, you'll see a few more given next week. And that's the bit that really gets me. You know, so you're never 100% on anything.
Yes.
You know, you hear the commentators, don't you? Yeah, mate, you know, can you hear the commentators there? I mean, Andy Inchcliffe gets on my last nerve. You know, he banged on about it, didn't he? And that, it's a penalty for me, it's a penalty, it's a penalty, it's a penalty. And then you've got the you know, you see Sky today, and it's Mac Gallagher saying, no, it's not. And I'm backing up what you guys are saying there in terms of, you know, it's a natural body position. He's moving as he's running, he's very close. So, again, it just all boils down to the inconsistencies in the Premier League. There's no, they give these definitions, but it's not clear, mate. I'm still not sure. You can see it at the hand and go, no. Oh, you know what I mean? And then they give it, or they don't. It's, you know, it's
frustrating. I think what saves Young on that one is that, like, sometimes you'll see the player, as the ball hits his arm, because it's hit it, it's moving away. But if you actually watch it, and this is where slow motion does actually help, because everything looks worse in slow motion, but this actually helps it. He's already moving his arm, but because he is so close and he's 39 years of age, he hasn't got the reflexes that he once had. He can't move it. To be fair, mate, even if he was 21, he would not have been... The pace the ball was hit at and how close he was, he couldn't have moved his arm. And because he was running towards him to close him down, the momentum, as Dermot Gallagher said, his arms are in a natural position for what he was trying to do. He was trying to close him down. So for me, that's the most obvious one that should not have been given. And it wasn't, luckily. Yeah. I mean, I'd be a bit upset if it wasn't given, but when you look at it, I mean, if that was given and for us, I'd be like, we got away with one there, because it was too close. It's like, I don't know if you've seen the Chelsea and City semi-final, the Grealish ball.
That was awful. Yeah,
like, I know that wasn't given, but that was a lot more distance in between. Yeah.
And his arms, like, way out as well whilst he's in the wall.
I know, but again, your natural body position when you jump, mate, no one can jump with their arm, without their arms. And he's on his way back down because he jumps up in the wall. I don't think that one should have been given, and it wasn't. I really don't. I think the ones that are blatant are when they, like, lean into it and, like, but they keep their arms close to the chest, but they lean down towards it.
And like Rodri's against us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. That's what I mean. That's what I mean, the consistency on it. You know what I mean? You see that. You see the Odegaard one against Liverpool. It wasn't given.
Oh, that was
probably
bad,
all made up. But he literally leaned on the ball, didn't he? You know what I mean? He leaned into it.
Don't you remember the Dele Alli one, the Tottenham, when he was at Tottenham against us?
Oh, yeah.
And they actually said, we're not going to give out balls this season, like stupid ones, unless their arms are above their head. He was trying to slam dunk a basketball, and he still never gave it.
I think on the show on Sky, the presenter was making the argument of he used Mal Augusto, the right back for Chelsea, said that when he defends crosses or when he's jockeying other players, he always keeps his arms behind his back. And then Warnock and I can't remember the lady's name. Is it Sue Smith? Is it?
Smith,
yeah. They both said that isn't like, it's not sustainable to defend like that. You're off balance as soon as you're doing that. So the way Young's done it is obviously a natural body position, and I think the presenter was just challenging him on it. But
he's just trying to create headlines. But he wasn't jockeying him because he was closing him down.
He's running in on
jockeying someone along the line and trying to keep them on like the weaker foot. It's easy to keep your hand behind your back, but when you're chasing someone, no human being can run without using their arms.
No.
Yeah.
So. No.
It was like Dingo, wasn't it? Calvert-Lewin, when he went up a couple of times. I think the lad got flicked in the face, and you got to jump, haven't you? You got to leap with your arms. You can't not. Like, it's bonkers. They need to, again, will we ever get to the bottom of that or to a point where that there is a good level of decisions? I don't know.
Not just on balls, but with VAR, when you look at the Liverpool game this weekend, and it was in the United Coventry game as well. Like the line's drawn over Wan-Bissaka's foot, and they've given it as offside. And Liverpool's one that the commentators, the VAR, said that the lines were touching each other, so because it's so close that they give benefit of the doubt. And it was like, do you know what I mean? So, and then they're meant to be trying to bring in semi-automated VAR and stuff next season.
Yeah.
And
the one that they've used in the Champions League in the group stages this year, wasn't it, or last season? I think that needs to come in because, I mean,
so it's Champions League semi, the World Cup was fully automated, was it? Because there was literally no problems with the World Cup at all.
I think it needs to come in because the pace the game's played at now, you know, these linesmen are relatively fit. They run up and down for 90 minutes. I'd say some games, mate, they probably do more running than most of the midfielders in the game. You know what I mean? But the way the game's played now, I mean, these keepers can kick a ball from one end of the pitch to the other. And if you're on the halfway line as a linesman, you can't tell whether someone's offside 30 yards up the pitch. You just can't. It needs to come in. And then they'll probably get rid of the linesman then. Because they won't be needed for nothing really, will they? Let's face it.
So the third instance of the penalty was the one that I thought was the most controversial in terms of a thought that we really did get away with it not being given. Was Young again. He comes across and he goes through the back of the Forest forward. What did you think? I thought it was that one was the one, like I say, that should have been given, and we were lucky not to concede the penalty with that one.
Well, at first, I didn't think it was. I still think he's going down before the contact's made, and I don't like that in modern football. Okay. It's a contact sport. You've got to wait for the contact. But he does eventually go through him. Even though it's minimal because he tries to stop himself. I mean, he digs his hand into the pitch to try and stop himself because he knows he's going to make contact. So out of the three, I'm with you, Shane. I think out of them three, I can see why. If Deidre said about that one in the tweet, Nottingham Forest, I totally understand because I don't think the other two are pens, but that one. The more I've looked at it, I was speaking to someone on Twitter. And, I mean, I was watching it in work, so wasn't the best link that I've ever had. And if all the angles I've seen, it didn't look like he touched him. And then I watched it on Match of the Day last night. And, he does catch him. But he is going down already, and I hate that. I hate that about modern football. Stay on your feet. He was going towards the goal. It's like, stay on your fucking feet. And this goes for Everton players because Arteta was the fucking master of it at Everton and Pina. They go down, They're going down before Gerrard used to do it for Liverpool every fucking week. And it really, really annoys me. Stay on your feet. You're not playing basketball. You're playing football. It's a contact sport. Someone clips your knees or your ankles, get over it. You know what I mean? You're getting paid over £100,000 a week. Get over it.
That's what that Dermot said with the first penalty shout was that if they start giving them ones as fouls or penalties, then that's when you're sort of pushing the boundary of football becoming a non-contact sport altogether. So
it's
Paul, Dice was rocking a tracksuit on the touchline. He got interviewed. I mean, it was half painful watching it. He got interviewed afterwards and must have got asked about it more than the game itself. And he's like, "What? Like, stop asking like why he's going on about it." He joked about it at first, but we haven't done a pod for a bit, so I just want to get the general collective over both of your thoughts over Dice referring to himself as being called the Messiah.
That one's just burnt my head out. That one really has. You know, I won't ever take away from him. He's come in and he's had to deal with so much crap. You know, probably more than most football managers. And, you know, it's always something kind of off the field is really, you know, it's bad. It's a bad situation we're in. It is. There's no getting away from it. You know, but I don't think that can deflect from sometimes the way Dice comes across. And some people might think, no, he's just confidence and stuff. Just find him a little bit arrogant, if I'm honest. You know, there's nowhere more people suffering than us fans. You know, we've had to put up with this shite for years now. Consecutive relegation battles, year on year. We're all becoming experts in PSR, checking accounts and flow charts and, you know, profit and loss and all this rubbish. You know, instead of just enjoying football. And we can't even enjoy that. So, you know, what we need is just the manager to come out, just admit that they got it wrong or they got it right, you know. And that's all we wanted to hear, really. But for me, the Messiah stuff and all, like, whether it's tongue-in-cheek or whatever, I don't know. I do think he's an arrogant manager and he's genuinely not my cup of tea. But I do cut him some slack and give him some credit in terms of, you know, he is working under some horrendous, pressure and things that are beyond his control, you know, up a boardroom level or, you know, our ownership level and all the other things that are going on with punch deductions and, you know, near administration, depending on who you speak to. So I give him that. I give him that. But listen, he's on 5 million a year. I'd love to be on 5 million a year, mate.
top five in the league, isn't that manager wise? I think when we look
like
at it,
make 5 million before I die. Never mind in a year.
That's what I mean, mate. You know, if someone gives you 5 mil a year coming in, you know, for such a bad situation and we're horrendous and blah blah blah. Yeah, Sam, give me 5 million. I'll take that all day long. You know, let's just cut to the chase in terms of Dice. For me, no, I don't want to really see him beyond this summer. If I get me way. I know he does split the fan base a little bit, but no, I think sometimes he just borders on arrogance and I just don't like that bit of it. You know, I don't mind a bit of it in managers and a bit of defiance and, you know, some battle cries and stuff like that. But I don't know, sometimes he just comes out with complete waffle for me and I just don't listen. No, I used to listen to his pre-match and post-match interviews and now I can't really be bothered. It's the same sort of sound bites and stuff like that, mate. So, yeah, he's a bittersweet manager for me, but, you know, if we're going to jump there, I you know, he's not for me, really. I give him credit for what he's done with the points deductions and everything else, all the meddling that comes in from above. But, mate, I think in the long haul, depending on what happens with us this season, whoever owns us, whether we stay up, whether we go down, I'd like to see a change in the summer. And whether that's harsh, it is what it is, but that's just me, mate. He's not for me, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Talking about owners, one of the couple of things I wanted to touch on just before we slightly touch on the derby. Lee, you're probably the most clued up out of everyone over this kind of stuff with Paul saying about us, you know, having to become financial experts and all stuff like that. That Everton's financial advisor and do not know how to pronounce that, do you? Is it Deloy? Delot?
Something like that,
he's been given the task, apparently, to find new buyers amongst questions that 777's finances and legal troubles. And apparently there's something about Qatar sniffing around the club. So, I mean, is there anything that you wanted to touch on with that?
Yeah, please come in and take over and put us out of that fucking misery one way or another. I don't
like
care
Paddy
what
Power
fucking,
advert, isn't it?
I don't give a flying fuck where your money's come from, what you've had to do, because I am at the end of my tether looking at fucking, as Paul said, accounts, and worrying whether we're going to go into administration, because I actually didn't know when I was watching the Chelsea game on Monday that MSP loan got extended, but it's only been extended by 2 weeks. So 777 have basically got, well, now they've got a week, because it was last Monday it got signed. And I put it in our chat before, I'm really worried because of the money that 777 have pumped in. So obviously, if 77 don't take over, by the sounds of it, whoever buys it has got to subsidize, basically give 777 their money back. Or Mishiri gives it back through the sale, whatever money he makes. Say he makes 400 million. He owes them about 180 to 200 million. So, I mean, mate, it's a fucking mess. It really is. It's so, I am literally like, that's why I haven't really been pushing to do podcasts the last couple of weeks, mate. I just can't be arsed with it. Literally, you know, fucking, what was it? 2 years ago, I joined the fucking 27 campaign when it was still called it. And we're still nowhere near. We're actually worse off now, which sounds fucking crazy because Bill's gone, Denise has gone. The other fella, Grant Ingle, whatever his name is, Mishiri's got fucking 1¾ foot out the door. But fucking the Premier League won't fucking let him just take that last fucking set of toes out the fucking door and slam the door shut in his face. Yeah, it's frustrating, mate. I really worry. I really do. Because I think as much as the players don't play well and the manager is polarising, I think they've done extremely well given that the fact that they've effectively lost 12 points and then we got 4 back. We might get 1 back in a couple of weeks when that hearing's being sorted out. But for us to be in a position where, you know, our fate's in our own hands after getting 2 points deductions, I think the players and the manager, as much as I've got no affection for any of them or the manager, I think they deserve a great amount of credit for keeping their head above water. We haven't been in the relegation zone since we got the first 10-point deduction. When you consider we haven't won, we've only won 2 games in 16, and we haven't been in the relegation zone for 1 minute of that time frame, it's quite staggering. I mean, it shows you how poor the teams below us are as well. But I do think they deserve a massive amount of credit for keeping their heads above water just. And now it's down to Mishiri and his advisors to keep the club above water financially and to keep it going. I think that'll be his lasting legacy is the fact that he's fucked it up so much. But there's one last good thing he can do. He can get the right people in and save us from going into administration and being in the championship next year.
Yeah, I've said for a while, I don't think a new start or a new dawn starts unless someone from Saudi or Qatar comes in and buys us. And it's just that jump start. But even then, it's like, I mean, you can't even jump ahead of yourself then because you look at Newcastle, who haven't even broke the bank really with the players they've bought. And now they're probably looking at the fact that they've probably got to sell like the likes of Bruno Guimaraes or players of the life to even spend money again next summer. So it's worrying, but we've dealt with it for the past couple of years. And obviously, I mean, we were so close to the City owners buying us all way back when, and how that could have been different. But The one last thing I wanted to touch on was probably one of the bigger things that's been spoken about around football is the FA Cup and the replays. John sent me this little, I think it was a tweet that somebody had put out, which is like a small little piece that reads, since 92-93 season when the Champions League was renamed, only four teams outside the Big Six have won the FA Cup, that being Everton, Portsmouth, Wigan and Leicester. In that time, with 32 competitions taking place, the Big Six have won 28 out of those 32. So playing in the Champions League all that time hasn't stopped the Big Six from winning the trophies. So why change the rules now and deprive replays, provide an extra revenue for the smaller clubs and to accommodate the Big Six? And then to end that, they said something stinks. We touched on it before the podcast there that, you know, the main drivers in this, and it's also being put forward through all the media of TalkSport and Sky and stuff, is that it's the likes of Klopp and Pep who have pushed for it the hardest and spoke out about it. But then the ones more confusing to me are the likes of Thomas Frank and O'Neill from Wolves, sort of sticking up for replays being scrapped. Paul Spessy more games than I do and stuff like that. But what, like, where's your head at? I mean, Everton being a Premier League club, we don't get in Europe no more. Does it benefit us, or is it just sort of a stain on everything? And because it drops right down to the whole football pyramid, doesn't it? The likes of like the lower league teams getting those Prem games in the replays.
Yeah, I think a lot of this impact is the expansion of the Champions League. I think they're putting it down a lot to that, aren't they, in terms of that's exponentially going up a lot. I can't remember exactly how many more teams are going in, but it's certainly being expanded to, you know, massive sort of scale in terms of, you know, those midweek matches taking place.
I think it works out that every club in the Champions League plays like an extra six games a season.
Is that what it is, mate? Yeah. So that's a massive increase. So I get that, but why should the domestic game suffer for that one-off game where, you know, a lower league team, you know, look across the road here at Tranmere, you know, they might scrape a draw at home against an Everton and get to go to Goodison Park in the replay, you know, or a Man United or a City or whatever. So it just takes that little bit of shine off it for me in terms of, you know, traditionally, and I know traditions can be broken, but I just feel for those clubs where, you know, they might hit a massive payday. I think I was reading about, you know, a particular club where, you know, got a Man United at home, and then they got to Old Trafford, and literally the revenue from that replay paid for the next two seasons. You know, and it's just those little things like that. I don't personally think of that. I just, you know, you think of an extra game and blah, blah, blah. But if you look at, looking at balance sheets in terms of other clubs, for those smaller clubs there or those lower league clubs, you know, that's a massive boost to their, you know, they might be able to build, you know, or improve their facilities, bring in, you know, a better academy, better coaches. So it's them type of things, infrastructure-wise, for those clubs, it's a major impact. So to lose out on that and the trip and giving the fans a day out, it's just sad. I think it's a sign of the way things are going, lads. And for me, it's just, you know, I think that the cup lost its sparkle, didn't it, when Man United opted out all them years ago for the World Club Cup. And you know, I think from then it started to lose its sparkle a little bit. And I think it's just spiraled on from then for me. You know, you see your Peps and your Klopps and whoever else may coming out. Gary O'Neill in the Wolves, one thing he did touch on was because of there, and again, it goes back to PSR, because they had to make PSR. I think his squad is literally down to about 18 or something. So his squad's been cut right the way down because they've had to shift players. Again, you can say, well, look, we're overspent and whatever, but again, it comes back to money as well. So, yeah, it's sad to see. I can see why those clubs who were at the top end of the table would want it. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't hit those people at the bottom. And like everything in society, it's those people at the bottom and those clubs at the bottom that get it the hardest. So, sad days. And You know, I think in the future you will see clubs starting to go, well, we're going to opt out the FA Cup, or, you know, you'll see the League Cup scrapped at some point. So, be interesting to see what happens in the future. But it is sad, mate, for me. It is sad.
Lee, do you think that, I mean, I was just thinking about it then, do you think it's the lesser of the two evils with the replays being scrapped? Or, you know, there was instances, like, through the past couple of seasons where, like, because of fixture, the congestion, Klopp didn't turn up to one of the games. And I seen a clip of, like, one of the players or the manager from the other team was, like, basically saying it was disrespectful or... You know,
yeah, that was when they were in the Club World Championship, weren't they? They played Villa in the League Cup, and they basically sent that, is it Neil Critchley? He was the under-21s manager, and they played all the kids.
Well, that, or like if there was a replay to happen, for argument's sake, like, I don't know, Marine was to get Liverpool, and then they end up getting a replay at Anfield, and then when Marine goes to Anfield to play in Liverpool's under-21s, like, you know, it does, that then does affect the revenue spoken about. But just, I mean, your thoughts on it, or what, do you think it is the lesser of two evils?
For me, it stinks of, and I don't like talking about politics on a podcast, but as Paul touched on it, it's the elite pissing and shitting all over the working class. Yeah. And the elite being the Premier League teams, in which obviously we all support a Premier League team. But me being working class, I think it's disgusting that they've scrapped it, because I think what the one Paul was talking about was Barnet. Was it Barnet or was it Burton Albion, when Nigel Clough was the manager, got the replay at Old Trafford and it kept them going? You scrap that, mate, you're going to have so many National League clubs, even some League Two clubs. And I know that the league is saying, and the FA is saying, oh, we're going to subsidise them by putting more games on TV. But then you suffer them with the attendances, because, you know, if someone, you know, if say someone like fucking Eastleigh or someone like that get a big game against United, a bit far to Savile, and they know it's going to be on TV, and they've already got... You don't pay for ITV, or, well, you pay through it through your TV license. Do you know? So it's that, it's double edged sword. Yeah, you're going to give them extra money for being on TV and put more games on TV. But then a lot of fans will be like, well, I don't have to travel because I can watch the match at home in the comfort of my own house. So for me, I think it stinks of elitism, and I don't like it really. I personally, it is annoying when you get a fixture congestion, but, you know, I mean, I can understand Gary O'Neill's point with what Paul's saying about his squad being trimmed down, but, you know, Liverpool and United and Chelsea and Arsenal, they've got two squads. I don't know, Arsenal and Chelsea, I know Poch and Arteta haven't really complained about it, but for me, no. It's tradition. Certain things in football need to change, and you need to move on with the times. But there's always room. There's always a little bit of room for tradition. You know, Wimbledon have kept it. Wimbledon and the tennis have kept it for all these years. The Masters, the golf, and I know Augusta. There's still room in modern day sport for a little bit of nostalgia and tradition. And for me, FA Cup replays, I understand them in the semis and the final because it's the business end of the season. I totally get that. But for them lower clubs in round 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 and that, no. It's the life and soul of some of these clubs. These clubs pray that they're going to get a big Premier League team in away day. Even though they know 99% of the time they're going to get knocked out. But it's probably going to be on TV because they want to see the giant killing. And then they're going to get half the gate receipts from a big 40, 50, 60 plus thousand seater stadium. So for me, I think it's disgusting what the Premier League clubs, I don't know. Obviously, we don't know how it's being voted for, but it's obviously being voted through to scrap them. And I think it's absolutely disgusting. I think whoever's voted for that should hang their heads in shame, because they've put a lot of lower league clubs in jeopardy for next season and going forward.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, like you say, we don't know how it was voted for, but I mean, as an Everton fan point of view, you'd absolutely kill to get to a final and win an FA Cup. I think the prestige of the FA Cup's been tainted by the big six clubs. It's sort of put to the side, like you say, for the Club World Cup, and obviously these are the clubs that wanted to go into the Super League and stuff. So, but then, I mean, as a neutral as well, like I used to love it on a Sunday. You'd have like some random League One team and a random like National League team playing against each other, and you'd get to watch that on BBC or on like the Red Button or whatever it was. There'd be about three or four of them on the telly, and you could watch them. Or like you're not really asked about a Tottenham versus Chelsea, like in the quarters or whatever. It's like you're not bothered. It's those smaller teams and want to get like the story behind it more than anything. You get like,
yeah.
But and for Everton as well, like I say, I mean, even like the League Cup is like, you know, it's just seen as like a Mickey Mouse Cup between, I think, like everyone, and just guaranteed that it's going to be the bigger ones that win it. Yeah, yeah. Oh, we're out of it now. It's the Mickey Mouse Cup, and you win it. Yeah. One out of four. We're hungry for more. Anyway, to finish off Wednesday, the derby. Who was it that put into the chat before? Since how long has it been that we've won the derby in Goodison? Yeah, okay. But, yeah.
27 was the last time we won a derby.
I'm in work myself, so I'm not going to have to endure it. But if we were to win it, I'd be gutted. But Lee, start off with you. How do you think it's going to go? And you know, could it be like the Chelsea game where it's, you know, a momentum killer and mood sort of killer, or do you think that we can get something out of it? I was saying before the podcast, the derby that I went to, we drew 0-0 with them, you know, was buzzing with it, and then we ended up being the last team to take points off Liverpool before they lost the league by 1 or 2 points. So it was lovely. But how do you see it going on Wednesday?
I'm a lot more relaxed because of Luton's result and our result. Because, you know, this game won't define whether we stay in the league or not. Because we've got to play, still got to play three teams around us. We've still got to play Luton, Sheffield United and Brentford.
Yeah.
But I would not be surprised if they absolutely annihilate us. And let's face it, as much as it pains me to say it, they're fucking levels above us.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we can look at the derby at Anfield. They should have been down to 10 men. They didn't really look like scoring until we went down to 10 men. But with them being out of Europe now, and they're obviously still in with a shout of winning the title, and I seen like Salah and Nunes and a few others didn't play, did they, against Fulham? Yes, on
yeah,
Sunday.
They got rested, yeah.
Yeah. I'm dreading it, but at the same time, I know it won't define whether we stay in the league, so I'm a bit more relaxed over it because of the win at the weekend. But I mean, I'm gonna go full Kevin Keegan here. I'd fucking love it if we beat them. But I just can't see it. I'd be happy if we didn't get fucking tramped like we did at Chelsea. And
yeah.
We put up a bit of a fight. And it's horrible saying that, but there's a reason why they've been in title challenges for most of the last 4 or 5 years, and we've been in a relegation battle for the last 3 years. You know, the levels above us, whether we like to admit it or not, they are. It's simple. There's never been since Liverpool were last relegated or Everton were last relegated, there's never been a bigger divide than what there is right now in terms of quality. That hasn't.
Yeah.
You know, because even when we were struggling in the 90s, they weren't really massive title challenges like they are now. This is the biggest divide that I've ever seen between Everton and Liverpool. So I am worried for the result itself and that, but it won't define whether we go down, so I'm also quite relaxed about it.
Yeah. I think that's sort of like changing or the shift in it.
1-11.
1-0. Yeah. Michael Keane. It's always a banger, isn't it? I think the nail in like the sort of shifting that what you were speaking about then was that how when I think it was in the FA Cup when we got beat by Liverpool's under-21s basically, and Curtis Jones scored that absolute worldie. That was like the epitome of embarrassment as an Everton
yeah,
fan.
We played our best 11, didn't we?
Yeah,
and got walked off the park.
Paul, like, I think Liverpool's frailties are in defence, but then ours are going forward, so it poses a problem for a result. But I mean, I'll move on to you. Like, what? How do you think? Maybe not how do you think it'll go, but what sort of the best scenario for us? Is it just not getting the floor wiped with us?
Yeah, mate. I mean, I don't know if we call it a frailty for Liverpool. I just don't know. Listen, they used to say, didn't they, but that, because from what Lee said there, mate, as well, you can't argue with it in terms of, you know, there is an element of damage limitation. Remember once upon a time at Derby, you know, or form goes out the window and all that.
Yeah.
Those are shite, mate. Listen, their pace, their movement, what they can get off the bench. You know what? That old one, I'd take a draw now. I genuinely would take a draw now, mate. I'm not holding that much open. I know that's going to come negative, but I can't be surprised by that. I mean, they're strong in every department. They're well drilled. They're fast. They're relentless. Could we cope with that? Literally bombarded from the first to the 90th minute? I really don't think so, mate. I mean, we played the low blocks, and I know that does frustrate Liverpool. You've seen it. I think Palace were really good at it. But I think Liverpool did miss a lot of chances as well that you'd expect them to slot away there, mate. So, you know, Nunes, I'm not too scared of him playing. This is where he scores an hat-trick now, because if you look at his, the chances he's missing, mate, I mean, you'd rather have Nunes, wouldn't you, up front? But he's due probably to score two or three goals out of the chances that he's having created for him. So, I hate the build-up. I just want it done, to be honest, mate. So if we can get a draw, I'll be over the moon. If by some absolute miracle we got a win, I mean, literally, that's, yeah, I think we'd all hit the ale, wouldn't we, that night? So just don't see it, mate. I'm sorry for all anyone who's going to listen to this. And, you know, listen, if we can take a punt out of that, I'd be over the moon. Realistically, for me, it's damage limitation. That's the realism for me, mate.
I don't think it's I mean, you're portrayed as being negative. I think it's just being realistic, though. I think, like you say, like in the position that we're in and they're in now, it's not like we're talking about when we would go head to head with them. And you're saying at that point, oh, I'd take a point or whatever. But I think, like you have said, I think the main thing is just to not get absolutely battered in terms of scoreline, like the Chelsea game. Or even if it is like a, you know, 3-4, but we get absolutely annihilated. I just think, even though it's not like the result won't affect the running. I think the switch back in the mood and the, you know, you heard Tarkowski after the Chelsea game saying it's the most embarrassing game he's had as part of a team and personally and stuff like that, and you don't want that festering around the dressing room five games into
especially the given end. That he played at Turf Moor every other week for 6 years.
Yeah, exactly. but you never know. Like you say, I can't even say, you know, try and be positive about it. As long as we don't get battered, I'm happy. That's fine. And I'm not, like I say, I'm in work, I'm not going to see it, but yeah. So we'll end it there anyway. Thanks for listening. Been with me, Shane, Lee, and Paul, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Evan, are we?
Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening to the Evan Army podcast. If you like what you've heard, then please share it with all your blue friends and family. And don't forget to rate, subscribe and review the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It really does help us out as we build this thing up. You can also catch us on Twitter by searching for @EAWpodcast. And if you have anything else you'd like to discuss with us, you can reach us via email at eawpodcast@gmail.com.